I don't know why I was traded, Rose said, but I would like to tell them thank you for giving me another start. I'm grateful to be where I'm at. I could have been anywhere. Not saying all the other teams are bad places, but to be in this market, the legacy and the history of basketball, coming from the rivalry with Chicago and New York, I'm grateful to be here. I feel like they're going to appreciate me a little bit more. Podcast brought to you by Fantrax. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do that by following along at redrock_bball. If you are watching this show live on YouTube, which is always a possibility with any of the shows I do, I suggest you can contact me or chime in, interact with the show by tweeting at me at that same handle at redrock_bball. If you haven't checked out the 2016 draft review show, I do check. I'd suggest that you do that. Stacks of people have done it. Heaps of people apparently liked it. I thought it was a pretty good show. It went for a long time, so split it up over a couple of sessions. It was 2.5 hours, but it broke down every single draft choice. And I think there's a little bit of information in there that I reckon you'll be able to get something out of for your not only just your upcoming fantasy leagues, but just general NBA watching and entertainment. I think it's entertaining in parts. Anyway, maybe it's a little dry in some parts, but I did my best to power through 2.5 hours of breaking down the NBA draft. What we're doing in today's podcast is we're looking back at the 2015 rookie crop, so the rookies that just finished last season, and breaking down how they went and what I see in the future. I'm not going to be doing all 73 rookies that played last season, because let's be honest, you don't want to hear me talk for another 3 hours or so. I'll be just covering a few of the players, the more important ones, answering your questions and going through just some general takes on rookies in fantasy in general. But before I do that, this podcast is brought to you by Fantrax, as I mentioned before, and you should know what Fantrax is. It is the best place to host your fantasy league, whether that's basketball or football or baseball or hockey or whatever sport it is. Fantrax is the place to do it. We are hosting a stack of listener leagues on Fantrax this season, which I'll get to in just a second. But you can do so much stuff on Fantrax. You can have contracts, you can have salaries, you can do three-way trades. You have dynasty leagues that never stop. You can be doing trading for future draft choices. I had a dynasty league on ESPN. We've just converted it over to Fantrax because we don't want to have to deal with Google Sheets and manually calculating salary increases and who I'm keeping and who I'm not, and trading for future picks. Fantrax just does it all for us. So why don't you do that? Transfer your league over to Fantrax. I'm sure you will enjoy it. We have already got the two Red Rock 30-team dynasty leagues set up. The first one, which is called the Steph Curry Division. I'm being real original here and using the number 30, so players who wore number 30. The second one is called the Bernard King Division. So that is the two Red Rock 30-team dynasty leagues. We have got the Red Rock Redraft Leagues, which I set all of them up yesterday. And no, we're not taking applications for all the Redraft Leagues just yet, but just be aware there are 24 of those that are going to be running next season, 12 head-to-head leagues and 12 roto leagues, which we'll start recruiting for those in August sometime. The other one I set up was the Red Rock Real Salary Cap League. I did it on Fantrax, of course, because they give the ability to include salaries and because they're also the best place out there. So what I'm doing now is I want people in this league. It is a 30-team dynasty league. So we've got the other two 30-team dynasty leagues, the Steph Curry League, the Bernard King League. This is 30 teams as well. But you've got to deal with a salary cap. You have $94 million to play with. And you have to draft players to fit under that salary cap. Everyone uses their real life salary. So when Harry Barnes, the pencil, gets $22 million this season, if you want him on your fantasy team, you have to pay $22 million. Simple as that. Steph Curry, you have to pay $11 million for him. Carl Anthony Towns, you pay $4 or $5 million for him. And as each player's salary changes, you can keep these guys for as long as you want. But when these guys get extension eligible and sign their new deals, that's what you're on the hook for. Then you have to make decisions. So it's a very interesting setup with the league. So we're going 30 deep, 30 teams deep. It's going to be the same sort of setup roster-wise as what the 30-team dynasties are, with 13 players per team. So it's basically you're building an NBA team. So your first couple of picks, it might not be the best players out there, but in the end, Harry Barnes is going to have to fit on a team. Yeah, Kent Bazemore, when he gets $16 million, he's going to have to go on a team because you're not going to be able to find his production somewhere else. Yes, it's probably not going to be a great use of your cash, but in the end, you'll have cash left over. So it makes a very, very interesting decision-making process with trying to weigh up salaries and the value of these players and salaries into the future and all that sort of stuff. So, sorry, I'm going to be coughing a fair bit during this show. I feel like this coughing is doing my head in. It's been happening all morning. So what I want now, who wants in? Who wants in this league? At the moment, there's myself that's in this league. We've got Mark Roberts, who is in this league. And you know Mark Roberts has been on this podcast plenty of times. He is the host of the Daily Fantasy Basketball podcast. He's in this league. Or David Hopkins in this league, who's a Red Rock stalwart and a fantasy guru from way back. They're the three people who are currently in this league. So that means I have 27 other spots available at this point for this Red Rock 30-team real salary league. You want in? Why? What, tell me why you want in. Tell me why you would be good at being in this league. Send me a 12-page PDF like Rahul did to get in the 30-team Dynasty League. Tell me that you constructed a team on NBA 2K, you're managing salary caps and doing trades, and this is the team you ended up with. Whatever. Tell me why you would be an ideal manager to be in a Dynasty League with 30 teams handling real salaries. That's it. Email it to redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. There will be people that miss out, I guarantee you. Don't be pissed. Don't be salty if you don't get in. Don't be like, oh, if I don't get in, I'm not listening, which some people did, which is just cool. Mate, that's pretty low. There will be people. And you have to realize that, you know, there's 27 spots in this league. There is 100 times people that listen to this podcast, 100 times that amount, maybe more. I don't even, my maths is way off. There's a lot of people. So make your application good, get it in, and we'll see if we can fit you in a spot. But as I said, there's lots of leagues that we've got going, but this is the last of the 30-team dynasties. We'll be doing the third one of them, and a little bit different with real salary cap involved. So send me an email. Don't send me a tweet. Don't send me a Facebook message. Send me an email with why you want to be in this Red Rock Real Salary Cap Dynasty League. It is going to be fun. It is going to be tricky. It is going to be something probably unlike anything you've ever done before, requiring a lot of different thought processes and valuations and all that sort of stuff. There is lots of GM-like machinations involved with this sort of league. It'll be fun. You'll be able to handle it, and you'll probably beat me. So get involved, send me an email, and tell me why you want to be in this league and why you deserve to be in this league, because I said there is going to be plenty of people who apply and people will miss out. So make your application a good one if you want in this league.
Let's get to it.
We're talking rookies. Now, the rookies were great this year. There's no doubting that. But as per usual, the standard tenet of fantasy leagues, it basically held true. It basically held true. Your rookies, they're not going to be great. It happens occasionally. It happens occasionally, but it's in general, rookies will get overdrafted. Now, we can look at this draft class and say it was awesome. It was one of the best draft classes ever. And that's true. But how many players ended up in the top 100 for the season? 4. How many players ended up in the top 50 for the season? 1. I think on average, in the past 5 or 6 years, I have to go back and check my numbers, that 2.1 players finished in the top 100. So we were above average, definitely. But 4 players finished in the top 100. One of those was Jahlil Okafor, yep, who got injured to end the season. One of them was Nikola Jokic, a player who wasn't drafted this season. The other two, Karl-Anthony Towns and Kristaps Porzingis, as we know. And you know, Towns obviously was a top 50 player who exceeded everybody's expectations. But everyone else, yeah, Porzingis was good, but he still didn't finish inside the top 50, which I think would shock people. He was 50th in 9 cat leagues. He was 55th in 8 cat leagues. I think that might surprise people. Nikola Jokic, 66th in 9 cat, 83rd in 8 cat leagues. Yep, he was great to end the season, but he still wasn't sensational. Okafor was, I think, 120th in 9 cat and like 88th in 8 cat leagues. Towns, a freak. You know, 12th in 9 cat, 17th in 8 cat leagues. We know how good he was. He's going to be a first round pick next year. But this all holds true for next season, especially when the rookie class is weaker as a whole, and you might get 2 players inside the top 100 and probably 0 inside the top 50. Yet I can almost guarantee you will get 2 players drafted inside the top 60, and it will be Simmons and Ingram, and most likely neither of those guys will finish in the top 60. That is my very, 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 very early prediction. So look at last season. Rookies were great. They were fantastic. 4 guys in the top 100 and actually 2 guys inside the top 80. So it wasn't awesome. It was good. It wasn't awesome, though. You have players that, and this will happen every year, there will be stretches of players where, you know, you have to own them. Devin Booker, D'Angelo Russell. But it didn't actually, you know, last for the stretches of the season. They weren't like must own. Like Joshie Richardson was 241st for the season. Yes, by the second half of the year, you had to own him. But it didn't last. Normie Powell had stretches where you owned him. D'Angelo Russell, the same thing. Now, he finished 117th on the season, Russell, and I think there's some big things in store for him next season. But these aren't guys who finished inside the top 100. They weren't must-own players by any stretch. Emmanuel Mudiay, and he's a little bit different story because if you look at the punt ranking, say an 8-2 punt ranking, he was a lot better, 119th. But you know, if you look at full 8 cat, he's 167th, so way out of consideration for standard leagues. Just a slight reminder to not get too excited and to not overrate rookies based on what we saw from Towns. Simmons won't be top 50. Ingram, I don't think, will be top 100. I don't think anybody really gets anywhere near Towns' level, and I would be, at this early point, shocked if we had a top 50 finish from a rookie. But remember, things change. Second half of the season, rookies get a lot better. And that's something that does happen, and you need to pay attention to it. And it's making moves at the right time. But in terms of drafting them, you might draft a guy like D'Angelo Russell. You have to hold him for 3 months so he can return value of 100 post All-Star break. It's not worth it most of the time, or nearly all the time. And I think I drafted one rookie in all of my leagues that weren't Dynasty last season, and that was Stan Johnson. I think I dropped him before the season even started. It was just a hunch and seeing what happened in preseason. Thought maybe he had a chance to get minutes. Didn't happen, and I dropped him. And that's the only guy that I ended up drafting, I think. This is it's a pretty common theme through fantasy, so don't get overly excited. But let's get into these guys from last season. And what I did is I went onto Basketball Reference and I sorted these players by VORP. Karl-Anthony Towns had the best VORP of all the rookies by a clear margin. Actually, no. Let's try that again. Karl-Anthony Towns had the best VORP of all rookies, 3.1. Nikola Jokic was second with 3.0. That is how close those two were in terms of their advanced metrics. The next highest was Porzingis at 1.1.
Porzingis.
So the difference between Jokic and Porzingis was 2 points per 100 possessions in VORP, and between Jokic and Towns, it was 0.1. It's shocking how good Jokic was last season. I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand just how impactful he was last season and just how good he was as a player. Let's talk Towns. I went through all these guys in their season in review podcast for their respective teams. And if I want to look at player comps, it's really hard to get one for Karl-Anthony Towns because, you know, I've got my player comp program here that I go through, and no one has really been able to do what he's done, or not to a degree of closeness. So the players that come out of being similar to him are guys like Al Horford, you know, Spencer Hawes, Anthony Randolph, Maurice Spates, but they're not close enough for me to go, yeah, that's a great player comp. In essence, that no one is like what Karl-Anthony Towns can do. He will be the number one player in fantasy within 3 seasons. He will be a top 5 guy for the next 10 seasons, most likely. Probably not starting next season, but by his 3rd season, he'll be a top 5 guy. I would take him inside the top five in the Dynasty League, no doubt. I wouldn't take him in a top five next season in redraft, but I couldn't blame you if you did. It's probably a little bit aggressive. He was 17th in 8-cat leagues this year. So he was 12th in 9-cat, but you know my thoughts on 9-cat and the way that those turnovers do inflate numbers. And he actually slowed a little bit towards the end of the season. Now, with Tom Thibodeau, what changes? Does his defense get better? Well, it was already okay. It can get better, but is that going to translate into more fantasy stats? Who knows? You would think that he would find himself in the top 10 next season. Probably around that 9 mark would be my guess. Maybe 11 or 12. That would be my estimation for Karl Anthony Towns. He is an animal. We know how good he is. There's really not much more I need to say. He played 32 minutes a game next season. He's going to have Thibodeau. Is he going to play 35 minutes a game? Well, that could very well vault him inside the top 6. Not much to be really concerned about with Towns heading into next season. Jokic, on the other hand, he's 20 years old. He's as young as Towns. He had a true shooting of 58. He averaged 10 points a game only, 7 rebounds, but a steal a game, 0.6 blocks. He shot the ball exceedingly well as well for rookie. That 58% true shooting shows that. He's a 51% shooter. He hit 33% of his threes. He hit 81% of his free throws. The problem with Jokic, and I think he'll get overdrafted next season, is Jusuf Nurkic. Now, Nurkic struggled, but he's also a beast. And he struggled with knee injuries, and I think that he could be in for some more minutes next season. Now, my hope is that they play Jokic a bit at the four and get both of these guys 27 to 30 minutes a night. And Jokic played under 22 minutes this season. And was as good as he was a top 90 player, a top 60 guy post All-Star in so few minutes. He's a guy that you draft inside the top 100, no doubt, but do you pick him inside the top 50? I think that's probably a little bit ballsy, just with the uncertainty of how Malone will run that rotation. There was a lot of uncertainty with the way that Malone ran it last season in terms of how many minutes is Jokic getting, how many minutes is Nurkic getting. And I think with Nurkic healthier, we're going to see more from him because he can be... Jokic can be a good rim protector. Nurkic can be an even better one. And both of them can do a lot offensively and defensively. So it's going to be interesting to see how he runs that. But Jokic is prime for another top 100 season and has got a real threat to crack the top 50 next season. He was... It goes under the radar, but he was as good as any rookie we've seen in the past. He would have been the rookie of the year in the previous season, almost no doubt, in my mind.
Percentages.
Struggled immensely under Kurt Rambis, and that's fine because Kurt Rambis is literally shit. Like, he's a terrible, terrible coach. Zubin Petrao just asked a question, which I'll touch on now. He says, was the Joker, which is Nikola Jokic, better than Porzingis overall? I think overall he was. I think that you'd have to say he was more impressive. Now, Porzingis was great. He had a lot of hype, and I was the biggest Porzingis fan there was heading into the season. But overall, I would say that Jokic was more impressive. And that's not taking anything away from Porzingis. He was the 37th ranked player in 9-cat leagues before the All-Star break. And then Rambis got his grubby little hands on him and dropped him down to 80th. Kept restricting his minutes, playing him out of position, and it's ludicrous. Hornacek, hopefully, is just going, well, Kristaps, you're a 4, maybe you're a 5, definitely, and that's exactly how I think he should be. He should be their 5. If the Knicks go out and sign another 5 to a long-term deal, it's a joke to me. That's where they should be developing Porzingis. He should be playing at the 5, and he will become an absolute monster at the 5. He has got a better chance of being a top 50 player next season than what Jokic has because I think that he gets more of those minutes. I think that he can get a much bigger role. He only played 28 this year. He's in line to go for over 30. His shooting should improve. He only shot 42% and 33 from three. He could get that to 46 and 35, and you're already seeing an increase in his numbers, in his three-pointers, in everything that he does. He already hit 1 3 a game and blocked almost 2 shots a game. He's going to be a monster, Porzingis, and playing him at center, he'll get more block shots, he'll get higher field goal percentage, and then popping out to three, he becomes extremely dangerous. He will be drafted in the top 50 next season, and there's no reason why he shouldn't be. he will be a top 20 player in dynasty leagues. And again, there's no reason why he shouldn't be. If Jokic was in the same situation as Porzingis, then he would be, you know, top 30 upside for sure. If he was in that, you are the man, you are getting 30 minutes. I just don't think that Mike Malone has got that in him at this point, unless they decide to completely erase Kenneth Faried, which is fine with me, and run him at the four a lot more and play him half his minutes at the five and half his minutes at the four. Porzingis was great. Let's hope no injuries derail him. There's a lot to like about him. He can improve his passing as well, which isn't great, but he can improve it. The shot blocking's there. The scoring's there. The only thing I worry about is the addition of Derrick Rose. That's a lot of usage. It's a lot of ball that's going to go to Rose, a lot that's going to go to Melo. And you're hopefully not taking the ball too much out of Porzingis' hands. But that is the fear. The Knicks seem to be illogically accelerating their rebuilding plan. It makes no sense to me to get a guy like Rose to pair with Melo and then thinking, oh, this is going to increase us to free agents. You don't want that. Like, this is not what you want to do. You're not getting Kevin Durant. I posted a thing today with a picture of everyone in Knicks uniforms. It was Melo, Porzingis, Rose, and then Durant and Howard. Like, cool. Seriously, like, what kind of... Anyway, the Knicks aren't getting these players, and I'm not sure... I'm pretty sure that the Rose addition is not a good situation for Porzingis to develop unless Rose becomes a completely different player than what we've seen throughout his career and starts averaging 7 assists a game and stops settling for bad pull-up jumpers and hits some threes and, you know, defers a lot. I just don't see that being Derrick Rose. I just don't see that being what Phil Jackson wants Derrick Rose to be. And that's a concern for Porzingis, but he should be a top 50 player next year. But you're going to have to spend up. You're going to have to spend top 50 to get him, absolutely no doubt. The fourth player on the rookie VORP ranking list was Willie Cauley-Stein, who was impressive despite, again, just general coaching ineptitude from George Karl, who basically just refused to play Willie Cauley-Stein because his opinion was, I'm not going to be here, guys. Why am I going to develop someone? It doesn't matter if I win. It doesn't matter if I lose. I'm just going to stuff you up as an organization, and I'm not going to play your best players that need developing. And, you know, for a 65-year-old man, to be as petty as that, to be as petty as a primary school kid, it shows a lot. That whole organization is just, you know, trash. The fans deserve so much better. But when you create that sort of toxic environment where the coach is like, he's literally putting his fingers in his ears and going, la la la, don't hear you, don't care, can't hear you. Or he's giving a metaphorical talk to the hand when they're saying, you know, let's develop these guys. He's going, why do I care? And then Vivek doesn't have the balls, and the minority owners don't have the balls to fire him when it was clearly a fireable offense and everything he did was a fireable offense. I feel sorry for Cauley-Stein. Now, Cousins is gone. We know he's gone by, yeah, probably maybe the trade deadline, probably next season. And then Cauley-Stein can actually play center, his preferred position. So you're going to have to wait a little bit for Cauley-Stein to show up. He was 136th in 9-cat last year, much higher than I anticipated. 171 in 8-cat. But he needs more minutes. He played 21 minutes a game. I think he starts to get them this season, but realistically, how many more does he get? Unless they run a Cousins Cauley-Stein lineup a lot more, which is a possibility, but ideally they want to run Gay at the four and Caspi at the four. Now, the only positive I can see is that Dave Yeager is now the coach, and he ran two big men for a long time, Randolph and Gasol. So maybe we see more Cauley-Stein and more Cousins together. Don't forget, there's Papianis. There's Scalabissier as well. There's a lot of big men. They won't have too much of an impact. But I think you can make a fair argument that Cauley-Stein will be a top 100 player next season. But there is that risk that they just play him 23 minutes again. But I think that he gets the 27-28, plays next to Cousins in a sort of Memphis-y type lineup. But it's the Kings. Who knows what happens? Gay might be gone, and that might really open up some minutes for Cauley-Stein. Maybe they bite the bullet and trade Cousins. Unlikely. But that could happen. So, yeah, Cauley-Stein, I think, is bound for a pretty big improvement. He was very close to Porzingis in terms of his VORP numbers last season. Impressive true shooting. You know, shot 56% from the field. Didn't obviously take many long shots, but 65 from the line is better than I think some people may have anticipated. He averaged 7-5 with a block a game. He could be a 10-7 with 1.5 blocks a game next season. That's sort of Robin Lopez-ish numbers, which puts him to be a player who's in the top 100, especially with that high field goal percentage in the 90s. So I reckon Cauley Stein's a guy that takes a jump next season. The next player, I'm not going through this entire list because, you know, I don't think you want to hear me speak for 5 minutes on Sacha Conn. Justice Winslow was number 5 in VORP. He was far from a fantasy darling. 227th in NICAT, 219th in 8CAT leagues. Showed improvement as most rookies do. Rookie wall, everyone. Each of these guys, apart Porzingis struggled, but that wasn't rookie wall, that was coaching. Towns dropped marginally post-All-Star. Cauley Stein got better. Winslow got better. And pretty much every other player got better in the second half of the season as they banged into that rookie wall. If you're not watching the video, you didn't see me roll my eyes then. Justice Winslow, he played a lot of minutes. He was a key contributor. But fantasy, it was pretty poo. Like, not a lot we saw from him that got us exciting. True shooting of 49% is really pathetic. And if you don't know, a true shooting of 56 is about league average. And he was nowhere near that. He played 29 minutes a game, so the minutes are not a problem. Now, he might get more if Luol Deng leaves. He could find himself into 30 minutes. Even if Deng doesn't leave, you got Joe Johnson's minutes there. You'll find Winslow getting 30 minutes a game, no doubt. But 6.5 points, 5 rebounds, 0.4 threes, 0.9 steals, 42 and 68, and 28 from 3. That's the struggle. But rookies will get a big jump in their percentages. You'll see him potentially take it to 45, potentially take it to 72, potentially take it to 31. And then we start talking. Now, is Winslow a player I take in the top 100 next season? Absolutely not. Where's his ceiling as a fantasy player? I think it's actually pretty high. I think it might take 2 years to develop. But I think that he could become a top 60 player at some point. So he is a real dynasty target to me, but just don't expect much next season. It's going to take a little bit. That shooting really needs to come around, but we know he can stick on the court, and that's as good a sign as you can get from anyone, from any rookie at this point in their career. Boban Marjanovic, he was the 11th player in NICAT per 36 ranking last season. He was an absolute monster. He was, as you heard here, 6th in VORP amongst rookies. He is not a novelty. He does a lot when he is out on the court. He's offensively fairly gifted. But can he be trusted to play big minutes? I think that's probably the concern with Boban. Now, Tim Duncan, it appears, will be back next season, so that's going to limit what Marjanovic can do. But you would think he'd get more than the 9 minutes a game that he played this season. Maybe 15 or 16. But I don't have massive hopes for Marjanovic. He's already 27 years old, I think. Is that right? He's already 27 years old. So by the time he gets maybe a full-time starting gig, he's 29, maybe 28, probably 29. And you know, where do you go from there? He might have one season of a top 100 season in his career. And as impressive as he was, and he was really impressive, not sure how he goes getting to 30 minutes. And whether he can stand 30 minutes, whether he can run out 30 minutes, and how long that sort of value lasts. Joshy Richardson, one of my many boyfriends in the NBA, he was a guy that I did tout, not all that aggressively, but pretty aggressively in the preseason, especially for dynasty leagues. I said this guy is the player that they want to replace Dwayne Wade, and nothing has changed in my mind there. He only started 2 games for the season. He only played 21 minutes a game, but he was the 7th ranked player in VORP. Over the course of the season. I mentioned before he was a top 100 player post-All-Star in 9K leagues, finishing 94th. He also shot the ball at a ludicrous rate that is honestly, it's probably not going to be something that can happen again. He shot 46% from 3, better than his overall field goal percentage, which was 45, and he only shot 67% from the line. So I'm a little bit worried there that that's sort of not sustainable. But 6.6 points, a 3, 2 rebounds, 0.7 steals, half a block. So what I anticipate from Richardson, he'll be a good guy for getting steals, he'll hit threes, he'll get blocks. So he'll be a triple one-ish type of player. Probably won't ever get to one block a game, but as a guard, his steal numbers will be good. But rebounds, assists, he needs to work on all of that, and he's got a fair way to go. If Wade's back, which is likely, then Richardson is not going to be worth it in standard leagues. But I do think he can become a solid top 80 guy at some point throughout his career, and I really was impressed with what I saw from Joshy Richardson this season. The next player we want to take a look at is Nemanja Bjelica. We don't know how Bjelica is going to go under Tom Thibodeau. We don't know the right way that Thibodeau is going to run that 4 spot. Is he going to put Gorgui Dieng out there, which is my preferred option? Is he going to put Bjelica out there, who showed a tremendous shooting to start the season, completely disappeared for about the middle 4 months of the season and then came back pretty strong at the end. But like Boban Marjanovic, he is 27 years old. His defense is a little bit of a worry. Now, he did have a really good true shooting of 59%, but what can we expect from Bielica? I'm not sure we can expect a huge amount. He was, if I get up the rankings, he was the 246th player last season, but 152nd post All-Star, which is a pretty significant jump. If I have a look at his comparisons, you know, no one comes all that close to him, but the closest guy that he doesn't have great correlation, but the closest guy he got here is Robert Horry and David Wood. And if you can have a Robert Horry type career, then I think you'd be relatively impressed, or he should be relatively valuable as we move forward. But again, at 27 years of age, he's probably more resigned to being a 14-team league guy at this point. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. We didn't get to see a huge amount of Rondae last season, but he still finished 9th in VORP and started 17 games out of his 29 games with Brooklyn. There's a lot to like here. 21 minutes a game, 5.8 points, very similar to Justice Winslow in that regard. 0.1 threes, but he grabbed 5.5 rebounds. He had 1.3 steals, 0.6 blocks, 46, 71, and 29. So the percentages were all better than what Winslow was able to get. His defensive numbers were better as well. And on a team that is absolutely devoid of talent, he is going to be the focal point defensively, and they're going to have to work him into the focal point defensively. There is a chance, it is a slim one, but there is a chance that Rondae Hollis-Jefferson could turn into a poor man's Kawhi Leonard. It'd be pretty poor. It'd be a destitute man's Kawhi Leonard, but he could turn into that. His closest player comp is Trevor Ariza, and I think you're pretty happy with that. Ariza's had multiple top 50 seasons, and I think Hollis-Jefferson can be that guy. Some of the other comparisons, Ronaldo Bulkman, Aaron Gordon, Quincy Acey, Matt Barnes, another Trevor Ariza, so a few Trevor Ariza seasons appearing there. There's a lot to like about what Hollis-Jefferson can do. To me, he's a late-round pick next season, and I think he will have a few top 50 seasons in his career. I'm really excited to see what Hollis-Jefferson can do next season and moving forward in his career, because he could very easily be 1.5 steals, 1 block, 0.6 threes, 8 rebound sort of player, and that can be really valuable with relatively solid percentages. Given that you start at 46-71 and he can't shoot, you know, to get it to 48-78, 33 from 3, is absolutely within the realms of possibility for a guy like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. The 10th player on the list, and these are the only guys I'm going to go through, but then I'll start picking and choosing, Frank Kaminsky. And a lot of people are down on Kaminsky. The Celtics, you know, wanted to give up 4 picks for that, that the Hornets took, but okay, they probably should have taken that deal. But Kaminsky was useful. He was solid, and he fit into a 20-minute a game role on a team that was equal 3rd in the Eastern Conference and was, let's be honest, a good team. And Kaminsky was a good contributor. And as a rookie, what more can you ask than just being a solid contributor? Kaminsky played 21 minutes a game, went 7.5 points, 0.8 threes, 4 rebounds, half a steal, half a block, 41, 73, 34. All of those percentages can increase dramatically, and I think they will next season. With no Al Jefferson likely back next season, and potentially no Marvin Williams, and no incoming rookies, and most likely no other free agents, Kaminsky's going to have a boost in his role. You'll get more Cody Zeller at the 4, and you'll get a bit of Frank at the 5. It's not a stretch to think Kaminsky can be a 27-minute-a-game guy who improves his percentages, improves his output, and sneaks himself inside the top 150. I don't think that's a crazy expectation for Frank. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm skewed. His closest player comps, they're not ideal. Donyell Marshall, Walter McCarty, Quincy Miller, Carlos Delfino, James Anderson, nothing overly exciting. They're more, you know, comparable to smaller players, and that's the way that he plays, but he does it in a big man's body. But he was fine, and he's going to have an NBA career based on being this backup big, maybe a starting big, maybe a fourth starter on a team, a fifth starter on a team, who can be useful and will have a couple of top 100 fantasy seasons. I'm pretty confident about that because he will hit a 3 a game. He'll block a shot a game. He'll get 6 rebounds a game. He'll score 12 or 13 points a game, and he'll do it relatively efficiently. let's go down this list now and just highlight a few other players who I think are worth highlighting. Normie Powell. It appears like DeMar DeRozan will be back next season in Toronto, so that's going to really limit what Powell can do. But I wouldn't be shocked if at some point in the next season that Toronto trades Damari Carroll. Let's be honest, he was terrible this season, and Powell, when he played, he really stepped in and looked decent. Struggled in the playoffs, no doubt about that, but I think that Powell has got some upside, and he might find himself on another team or just sitting into a role. Now, he won't be a top 150 guy next season. There's almost zero chance of that. Can't see that being the case for Norman Powell. But there's a lot to like about him in general, just the way he went about it. And for him to fit in as that sort of role player, I think it's handy. Now, his comparisons are Alan Anderson, Iman Shumpert, Kalena Azubuike, CJ McCollum, Carlos Delfina, Tyler Johnson, Rod Hood. So some pretty nice names there of groups of players, and he could really develop. So he is a name that I do like in dynasty leagues. I think that he's going to be better than the ranking we saw this year of 291. He was 135 post All-Star. I doubt he's a top 150 player next season, but I wouldn't be totally surprised. And I wouldn't be totally surprised if Damari Carroll either loses his role or is traded at some point because Powell has rendered him not useless, but superfluous. Maybe that's a better word. They maybe pushed DeRozan to the three and put Powell there at the two. But I think that Powell is going to be a long-term player in this league and have a long-term career. And if he starts off the season not doing well next season, that's a perfect time to pounce in a dynasty league. But he is someone to really pay attention to. D'Angelo Russell. Fair to say he didn't have the best season. It's also even fairer to say he didn't have the worst season. And the way he is treated at the moment and valued, and I know I bring this up a lot, but if you listen to the Cock Monsters on ESPN and some of the things that they say about him, I was going to do an impression, but should I do it? Nah, I won't do it. He has to be traded. He has to go. No, he doesn't. You know who has to go? Nick Young. Because A, he's shit at basketball. B, he was cheating on his missus. 3, not a good bloke. 4, yeah, humorous. And not doesn't have the talent of D'Angelo Russell. And if you're considering, or if you're stating that Russell needs to get traded because of the way he played, then just give up. Just write a resignation letter to whatever company you work for and say, oh, basketball's passed me by, guys. I've found the error of my ways. I literally don't know what I'm talking about. Because he struggled. But he's a rookie point guard. He's 19 years old. Of course he struggled. He was on a shit team. He was playing alongside the Kobe Bryant retirement wankathon. That's what he was doing. And even then, he still managed to show glimpses. If D'Angelo Russell is a top 50 player next season, I wouldn't be shocked. There's no chance that I'm drafting him there. No chance. But still, he could easily be a top 50 guy. Yeah, new team, new coach, new players, less idolatry. Why not? Why couldn't he be? Why couldn't D'Angelo Russell be a top 50 player next year? If you don't take him in the top 100, if you're sitting outside the top 100 and D'Angelo Russell's available in redraft leagues next year, you take him immediately. His value is as low as it gets in dynasty. Get him, trade for him. He's going to be good. 51% true shooting is not great, but it's not terrible as a rookie. His VORP was above average, and that's more than you can say for a lot of players in this class. He only started 48 games and played 28 minutes. He should be getting 33 minutes again. That's 5 minutes extra. Plus, his field goal percentage will go up. He won't shoot 41 from the field. He'll shoot 43. He shot 35 from three. That's a pretty good number. That could be 37. His free throw should improve. His court vision is still good. Now, I still have concerns about his game. I don't think he's going to be a star, but I still have concerns about his speed, his willingness to only go left, his explosion. But his court vision's great. And if Ingram develops into a spot-up shooter, a guy who hits those shots, if Randall does anything apart from rebound, if they actually plug Ivica Zubac in as a center, which I am begging for them to do that, because if the Lakers don't sign a center, Zubac will be the top-ranked rookie next season. I know that's a pretty big statement, but he will be the top-ranked rookie next season if they don't bring a center in. And they probably will, because it's the Lakers, and you've got to make the playoffs because we're purple and gold, and you know, we don't tolerate mediocrity. Cool. Whatever makes you sleep well at night. Zubac should be the center. Yeah, like Whiteside, different story. But don't go and grab some overpriced. Don't. Yeah, they're not getting Dwight Howard, but that's not what you need with this team. You need someone to help grow. And Whiteside would be great, but Whiteside is also 27. He's not that young. He doesn't fit the same age as your core, which is like 21. Anyway, I'm digressing. Russell is primed for a really, really big season next year. Really excited to see what he can do. Another guy that's primed for a big season, Chris McCullough in Brooklyn. We didn't see much from him, but in his limited appearances, he played just 24 games, 15 minutes a game, had a positive VORP at 0.1, which was actually better than Russell's. And who are the Nets got? Who's their starting power forward? I tell you now, it's Chris McCullough. And unless something changes in free agency, it's going to be McCullough. And he has got a fantasy-friendly game. Almost 5 points a game in 15 minutes. So you translate that to 30. Well, let's have a look at his per 36 numbers in his rookie season, because he's not playing 36, but it's a good baseline number to sort of look at. 11 points, 1.3 threes, 7 rebounds, 2.8 steals, 1.2 blocks. Yeah, 40% from the field, 37 from three, and 48 from the line is not ideal. And those numbers should improve. The free throws, maybe not, but he's a good, great defender. He can get steals, he can get blocks, he can get rebounds, and he hits threes. Chris McCullough is a real, real sleeper to me next season, and I think that he might have his best two seasons in his third and fourth season in the NBA and then tail off as the Nets get better. But he is primed for a big breakout next season. McCullough would really be his first season after, you know, playing a little bit after that ACL surgery. I think he's a great last round pick at this, again, at this early point. We don't know what's happening, but Thad Young's not there. Someone has to play power forward, and McCullough is likely going to be the guy to me. Really excited to see what he can do. Justin Anderson's the other one. If Chandler Parsons goes, it's all aboard Justin Anderson. He was impressive down the stretch. He put up, you know, decent advanced numbers above average, which again, as a rookie playing under Rick Carlisle, it's not easy to do. His raw numbers, you know, 3.8 points, 0.4 threes, not ideal, but he can block shots, he gets steals, he hits threes, he can score. He already hit 80% of his free throws, and that 27 from the three-point line, that'll increase. He was a 40% shooter at Virginia, I think, for two seasons. Expect that to hit to 35% in the next two seasons. You get to 46 from the field. Justin Anderson has got top 50 upside. I really, really like him, and that might seem a little bit aggressive, but I really like him. Let's talk about a couple other guys who are prime. Now, campaigns in a bit of a different situation now that Victor Oladipo's in Orlando, not Orlando, in Oklahoma City. Payne is a long, long play guy. Yeah, Billy Donovan didn't trust him at all, but in 3 years' time, Payne, at the end of his rookie contract, is going to be Reggie Jackson or Russell Westbrook's going to go. And Oladipo is not a point guard, so he needs to play with a point guard. So it's more dependent on if Westbrook goes, not the fact that Oladipo has arrived. If the campaign owner in your league is down because of the Oladipo addition, get him. It is going to take a while. It's going to take a while, but he can hit threes, he can score, he gets steals, his assist rate should be really, really good. I'm excited to see what campaign can do in a situation where he gets that opportunity. Now, Martin's just sent me a tweet. Have I talked about Stan Johnson yet? No, I haven't, Martin, but he will be a guy that's coming up. Campaign's per 36, 14, 4, and 5.5 with 1.8 threes and 1.8 steals on 40% shooting and 31 from three. There's a lot to like about that. Just remember, it's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of time for him to really get going, but it's going to be exciting when he does. Let's talk Stan Johnson now, because Martin just asked me about him. Now, Johnson's rookie season wasn't great. He was 57th out of all of the 73 rookies in terms of his VORP. He had his moments. And how do the Pistons deal with him? I think he'll probably struggle a little bit next season, but he played 23 minutes as a rookie. That's really good. he should start to siphon some minutes away from Marcus Morris. And Marcus Morris was great and Van Gundy loved him, but he is not the future. The future at the 3 and the 4 is Toby Harris and it's Stan Johnson. And Johnson plays him 2 as well. So I can see Stan getting up to 26 minutes a night next season. Is that enough to have much of an impact? Not really. Like, he was 296 last season, actually got worse post-All-Star, had some decent games in the playoffs. Is he a player that I would take in standard leagues next season? No. Would I build on him in a dynasty? Yeah. I think that he has got top 100 upside. He's got top 80 upside, but I'm not overly high on him, but he's 19 years old. He's really, really young. He's got a massive physique, but I think you have to wait 2 seasons at least for that to start to come together for him. Who else should we talk about in this list? Let's start with Emmanuel Mudiay, who was literally the worst rookie in VORP the entire season. He had a true shooting of 44%, which was horrific. It wasn't the worst rookie. Rashad Vaughn was there at under 40, which is just abysmal. Mudiay, he struggled a lot. But a lot of his struggles were to start the season. 363 pre-All-Star, 198 post-All-Star. It's a big jump. If you look at him in 8-2 ranks, 113th post-All-Star. And that's where it's going to be, because he needs to really improve that shooting. He shot 36% from the field. He shot 32 from 3. He shot 67 from the line. Now, all of those can improve, and all of them did improve. And with the players that are building around Denver, Mudiay is going to be a top 100 player. Is he a top 100 player next season? If I went out on a limb, I would say yes. I think he is a top 100 player next season. I really liked what I saw from him, and I do think that he can have a really, really impressive career. But the numbers were terrible last season, and I think that they get a lot better. Jerian Grant in Chicago now. We don't know what this is very dependent on what the Bulls do. I would love to have seen him as a starting point guard in New York. I love seeing him now in Chicago if he gets a chance to be the starter, running a lot of pick and roll with Hoiberg. Yeah, Butler's going to be handling the ball a lot, and Grant really needs to improve his shooting. It wasn't good last season. He hit 22% of his threes, true shooting of just 48. He needs to get better. But I think he can. Is he ever a top 50 player? Probably never. If he is the starter in Chicago and they don't bring anyone else in, he's a player that I'm drafting in standard leagues in the last 2 or 3 rounds, but I'm drafting him because, you know, he can score, he can drive to the basket, his rebounding is not bad, his defense is okay. Really want to see what happens or how he looks at summer league, but I'm expecting a pretty big jump from Jerian Grant this season. And Jahlil Okafor, he's, to me, yeah, he scored a lot, but he's not someone I'm going to be overly interested in for him in fantasy next season. Yeah, look, the numbers were okay, especially if you're a punting, like 65th post All-Star break. It was only about 3 or 4 games before he got injured, but you know, 84th 8 card, that's still pretty good. But with Embiid, with Simmons, with Saric, with Noel, he's the worst of that group, in my opinion. Maybe not Saric, because we don't really know at this point, but he's the worst player of that group. And if he stays in Philadelphia, he's going to be limited to a 20-ish minute role off the bench. He goes somewhere else and he plays 30 minutes, fine, but his defensive liabilities are a concern, and that might restrict him to just being a bench big throughout his career. If you could sell him off for a top 100 asset now, I probably would. I don't hold a huge amount of faith for Jahlil. Bob Portis. As much fanfare as I can remember for anyone, and did not live up to any of it. He was poor. I am a Portis fan. I'm a Bulls fan. He didn't do a huge amount, though. He was a negative asset, VORP-wise. To me, he's well and truly behind Nikola Mirotic on this team. And again, I get a lot of pushback from that because people think that Mirotic is terrible. He's not. He's actually really, really, really good. And he's clearly the second best player on this team to me. Portis, I would love to see some Mirotic-Portis lineups, but with Lopez there, that's going to limit that. Portis is not a standard league player for next season to me. I wouldn't be drafting him there. Will he have top 100 seasons? Yes, he most likely will have a couple, but I'm not overly invested in him being a prolonged star. I'll say that much. Mario Hezonja's got a real big opportunity to open up for him. He will be a standard league player next year. He probably won't be a top 100 player, but there is a chance that he can be. He was 303rd last season, but improved that to 224th after he smashed through that ever-imposing rookie wall and got better in the second half of the season. Imagine that. Imagine that a rookie got better in the second half of the season. It just doesn't happen, does it? With Victor Oladipo gone, yeah, Fournier is going to play the two, and Hezonja is going to play the three. That's how they're going to, unless they decide to mistakenly play Aaron Gordon there, but Hezonja is going to get more minutes. And I am really interested to see what he can do now. He was poor, but again, as a rookie, I don't care too much. It's more like, what did I see? Was anything there really appealing to me? And yes, there were things that were appealing. Really, really like what he can do. Miles Turner is another one. At 19 years of age, he is going to be the starting center. Mihinmi won't be back. Thad Young's the starting four. Turner's the center. He's going to block shots. He's going to hit threes. He'll score. He'll rebound. And he'll do it all efficiently. He is a top 50 player for next season, upside-wise. He'll probably be a top 70 guy. And you can draft him. Who knows? I would be really happy drafting him at 75-ish, around that sort of mark. I really think there's massive things in store for Miles Turner next season. I was super high on him last year, and I'm higher on him now. Anyone else we really need to cover off aggressively? Again, I could talk for 4 hours on these guys and cover every single player, but I won't do that. A guy that I still have a lot of faith in for you deep league dynasty players, DeLon Wright in Toronto. I really think that I know that he's better than Corey Joseph long term. So he's someone that you can really have a look at when Kyle Lowry is not young. Now, Lowry will start to decline. Wright is a real deep draft and stash type of guy, but he was pretty impressive. He shot 39% on his threes. Whenever he got an opportunity, he proved what he could do. DeLon Wright is a name you shouldn't forget, and there is a lot to like about him. Was there anyone else? If you're watching live, is there anyone else you want to hear me talk about in depth before I just wrap this show up? Just looking, Trey Lyles, 61st in VORP, really poor. I think he's going to be a star. It's going to be three seasons in the making, because where's he getting minutes behind Favors and Gobert? But Favors could easily get traded. I don't agree with that, but it could happen. And Lyles, I think, is going to be super impressive. He can rebound, he can score, he can hit threes, he can do defensive stuff. He is another longer-term type stash along with that campaign. Probably not as longer-term as Payne, but he is someone that I am really, really interested in moving forward. Okay, if there's no one else, if you're watching live, no one else that we've got there. All right, let's get into the questions. But before I do that, I just deleted my questions. Well, I'll bring them back up, because then I'll have a quick break, and then we'll be back to answer your questions thanks to Fan Essentials. I saw your picture today. Got me thinking about the things that I would say. But I know you're happy now in your someplace far away. Away, away, away. And I can't remember the way you taste, you taste, you taste. I walk down your old street, and I wonder if we'll ever meet again. Without a second glance, you turned your back, my friend. This is the end, the end, the end. And I can't pretend I'm ready to be your friend. So don't go, don't you know my face? I'm the one that made you. I know someone I should have talked about, because I knew that everyone's boyfriend. He's not my boyfriend as much as he is other people, and that is Devin Booker of the Phoenix Suns. Now, there was lots of circle jerking about Devin Booker last season, and he was impressive. He was the youngest player in the draft. We know that. He was really good. But how well did it translate to fantasy? The answer is not that well. He was the 203rd player for the season, and you might say, okay, Josh, let's look at post All-Star. Well, he was 182nd. In 8-cat, he was a lot higher, 105th. But he did it without Eric Bledsoe. He did it with Brandon Knight not being there for a lot of that time. So what do we expect from Booker? It's very dependent on what the Suns do with Bledsoe or Knight. Will he be a guy that gets drafted in the top 100 next season? It feels like he will, and it feels like it'll be a mistake unless one of those guys goes. Because he's just not going to be able to play 38 minutes a night, which is what he was doing for big chunks of the season last season, before after Bledsoe got injured. If we look at Devin Booker's best player comps for this season, Tony Dumas, Willie Green, Eric Strickland, Chris Carr, Deion Glover, Monte Ellis, Kobe's one of them down there as well. There are some okay names, but not spectacular. Actually, I probably should have told you the D'Angelo Russell comparisons because they were pretty impressive. Jim Jackson, Monte Ellis, JJ Barea, Patty Mills, J.R. Smith, Kobe Bryant. And when you go through these player comps over the last 20 or 30 years that I've done them, you know, it's on a per possession basis, there's a lot of scrubs that come up. But Russells are all really, really good players. Back to Devin Booker. I think he's a great investment for Dynasty because, you know, one, Bledsoe and Knight, they're not going to be there long term. Now, he averaged 14 points in 28 minutes, 1.3 threes, 2.6 assists, which was a surprise, 0.6 steals, 46-71 he shot. But only 29% from threes. That can't be right. No, 34% from threes. Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong column. 42 and 84 was his percentages. He can be better. He can be better as a three-point shooter. And 14 points is impressive, but points is not everything. Oh, he averaged 14 points as a rookie. That's fine, but it's one category in fantasy. So there's other things to pay attention to. And yes, he was, you know, approaching a top 100 player post-All-Star, but is his improvement enough to offset the return of Bledsoe and the return of Knight? I would gather no. And I think he goes in the top 100 next year, and I also think I want nothing to do with it. Now, in a dynasty league, so when we do our startup dynasty drafts, he has got a massive chance to be, you know, he'll be a top 40 player at some point in his career. He's got a chance to be that. I'm just not sure that I necessarily see it happening next season without a trade. There has to be a trade because, you know, he's just not going to play the minutes that he did in the second half of last season. It's just not going to happen. He's not going to get 38 minutes a night while Bledsoe and Knight sit on the bench. It's just not going to be what they do. But he will have a bigger role, and his playmaking was really impressive, and I think he's super enticing for Dynasty. But he needs to rebound the ball more. He needs to do more defensively as well. If he can get to a steal a game, which is a possibility, but he put 0.6 in 28 minutes, so it wasn't great, his steal rate, and that needs to get better. His rebounding needs to improve, and his shooting from three needs to improve. But he could be a 38% shooter from three. He could hit two threes a game next season and average 16 points. I'm just not sure that he's going to be a top 100 guy. I think, you know, you can develop him in his age 20 season. Again, just play him as a sixth man. Play him 26 minutes a night, similar to what he played last season overall. And then he comes in around that 150 mark. But top 100 feels aggressive, and he'll probably honestly go top 80, would be my guess at this point. And it just feels too high. Let's get to your questions now. Van Burf. On Twitter, at Van Burf. Who's the most likely? I'll tell you that these questions are brought to you by Fan Essentials. And if you ask a question in the Fan Essentials question time, you get a chance. Each week I'll be giving one away, a free month supply of Fan Essentials. But do you know what Fan Essentials is? Well, you should. Basically, how would you like to get your favorite NBA team's merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep? Well, check out fanessentials.net. All you do on there is pick your favorite sports team, and every month, Fan Essentials, they pick the gear and they ship it right to your door. They find the gear, you don't have to do it, and it's packed full of amazing stuff. It's a great gift idea for your dad, for your brother, for your uncle, for your sister, for your missus, anyone. Prices start at $34.99 a month, but you visit fanessentials.net and use the promo code REDROCK and you get 30% off your first month. Or you submit a question and you can get a free month, as Joseph Diffenbach did. And Joseph, when you get that first month's box, please send it to me. Or don't send me the box. Send me a picture of the box and so I can see exactly what you got in that box. So make sure you're getting in good questions and make sure you're checking out Fan Essentials and using that promo code. Visit fanessentials.net to get all the essentials you need. Van Burf, who is the most likely to have an improved sophomore season? There's a lot of candidates. I think Russell is probably number one. Miles Turner is probably number two. They're probably my top two guys, I think, for improved rookie sophomore seasons. Chris McCullough is in there as well. He could come from nowhere. So I think he is an option as well. But Turner and Russell are the two guys who could end up as top 50 guy next year. Mario Hezonja as well should be able to crack the top 100. Rich Newell says, hey Josh, what happens to Cam Payne now? I don't think Oladipo affects him too much. Now, it affects the ability of Payne and Westbrook to play in a lineup together because that's Oladipo's role, but Oladipo's a 2, Payne is a 1, so it is going to affect him, but I would think that that cuts more Randy Foye out of the lineup and we get more Payne next season. So despite the addition of Oladipo, I think we still get more Payne next season, but it's more Payne in terms of waiting for dynasty value to start to appear, and it's going to take a trade or it's going to take Westbrook leaving for him to really become effective. He won't be a top 150 player next season. Rich also asks, what do you see for Jordan Mickey this season? Well, it depends on if Ante Zizic comes across and what happens with Sullinger and Zeller, but they want to see what Mickey can do. So I think Zeller is gone. I think Mickey steps straight into that role and becomes a pretty decent shot blocker and will be a really good stream option and a really good deep league player. But I think he finds himself in a much bigger role next season. Now, if Zizic comes across, there's a chance that Zizic, you know, stunts his growth. But there is a chance for me for Mickey to be a guy that averages a block a game in 12 minutes a game or something like that and becomes, you know, a relatively useful fantasy player. They do really like Jordan Mickey, and I think that the drafting of Yabusele, the drafting of Zizic, means that Sullinger and Zeller are probably gone, because you mean you have Mickey improve, you're going to have Zizic potentially coming over. Now, Yabusele probably doesn't come over this season, and I think that that's partly because they want to see what Mickey can do, and then they'll make a judgment from there. But I think Mickey will become a 16-team league guy this season. Chris Zappolo says, Devin Booker, it looks like the Suns might be trying to clear more room for him. Yeah, it does appear that way, Chris, but until they do, I can't get on board drafting him in the top 100. You might think they're going to trade one of these guys during the season, but to me, making decisions in a redraft league based on trades that might happen is pretty risky stuff. Because you might sit there for 4 months. It's like when you hear a rumor in November and go, I'm going to sit on this guy, stash him. Stash him until the trade deadline, because the trade's going to come and he's going to be unleashed. Meanwhile, you've lost every one of your matchups up until February because you've been sitting on a 0. In a dynasty, it's a completely different situation, because you know that this situation's not tenable long term, that Booker, Bledsoe, and Knight are not going to be able to coexist. So at some point, you know that Booker is going to be that guy, but it might not be this season. It might be 2017. And that's why you're relying upon it in a standard league is a risky sort of situation. Any other questions? Van Burf and Chris are just having their own conversation in my questions thread here. Joseph Divenbach, the man, says, what rookie will make the biggest jump ratings-wise into year two? Just pure number-wise, I would have to say, let me have a look. What was Hezonja's rank? I think it's probably going to be Hezonja. He's going to jump from 303 to inside the top 150. I think it's probably him or McCullough, who could become a top 150 guy as well. And then you've got Russell and Turner, who are pretty... And Emmanuel Mudiay is another guy who can jump 60 or so spots. That's it. That is the show done for the rookie reviews. Oh, again, I could have gone much more in depth on this and gone for long, but I'm sure you didn't want to listen to a 4-hour podcast. The next one I'm going to do is covering the 2013 draft, because they're going to be the players heading into their fourth season, heading into that season where they're playing for a restricted free agent big contract, and that is when you see lots of bumps in value. So I think that's going to be a really interesting podcast talking about those players. That will be the next on the agenda, and might have one more before we do our first free agency podcast as well. Make sure you do check out the 2016 draft review, because I think it was really, really informative. I learned myself actually doing the podcast, which sounds stupid, but just really digging into every pick and talking about them really started to, you know, crystallize a lot of thoughts in my brain. We'll see how it ends up playing out, but I thought that was a really good podcast. Share that with your friends, share it on social media, leave a review on iTunes, give a thumbs up on YouTube. You know all the things to do. Basketball Monster, Hardwood Paroxysm, there's heaps of stuff. Fan Tracks, Fan Essentials, I'm supported by millions here. I'm going to be wearing a NASCAR top with all my sponsors across soon. I've already started collecting some new jerseys for next season. Ordered a Nikola Mirotic one. What else did I order? I've gone blank. Ordered a Ben Simmons one. I'm starting collecting my jerseys for next season. If you've got any jersey suggestions for next season, send them through to me on Twitter. Tell me what jersey you think I should get from your favorite team. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.